Today's episode of The Beat is brought to you by the Waterworks and Header HVAC, now together to serve you better, and proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics. Friends, the final Friday of February is here. It is a freaky Friday. It's a mailbag Friday. It's also a full disclosure Friday. Neither Jeremy Birmingham nor me, Austin Ward, are in Ohio right now. We took these mailbag questions in advance, and in the interest of transparency on The Beat, on the Waterworks, I feel like we should mention that right up front. You said we should do that, and we shouldn't pretend that we're recording live or that the days are always accurate. So let's just let them know, Berm.
Well, I think it's important that in the event something bananas happens on around any of these specific conversations that we're going to have today, that there's a reason we seem clueless and completely lost. So that's what happened.
Other days, there's not a reason for that.
Right. Other days, it's just because we're idiots. But in this specific instance, Austin is celebrating his birthday out of town. I'm trying to get my way back to Ohio because I'm going to go to Indianapolis this weekend to watch the Elite 11 and the opening in Carmel and spend the weekend with Mick Walker from Letterman Row watching some high school dudes do some high school football stuff, which is great. It's awesome to be back to camp season. Excited to do that. But getting out of town for a couple days felt pretty necessary for me as well, because it's really the only opportunity we have to do that until like 1 week of July.
Is it too early to know who may or may not be at this Elite 11 camp, or how much interest Ohio State may have in some players there?
Yes.
Got it.
But great. I promise Mick and I will have it covered both on LettermanRow.com, and then we'll have content here as well.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, because we had to record this early, no WWE questions about Elimination Chamber this weekend in Chicago. And I couldn't even predict it because everyone saw how terrible I was at that for the Royal Rumble. So we won't get to that, but very much looking forward to that development on the road to WrestleMania and the road to spring camp, which is a week and a half away. And JP, he said, I'm not advocating for a change at quarterback, but he or she is curious to hear our thoughts on the limited quarterback mobility in the offense this year for Ohio State. Do you think that was mainly a coaching decision, a lack of confidence from Julian Sain and running the ball, or some combination of both? Looking ahead, do you think quarterback mobility will become a bigger part of the Ohio State offensive scheme next season? I think this is a good question, and it can be a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, and some of column C, which I think is the next step in the physical and mental development for Julian Sain, just because I think he's capable of doing this.
Yeah, and it's not the first time that we've had this conversation after a season. It was the same conversation after CJ Stroud's first year, and the results in year two were the same. So Ohio State wants its quarterbacks to be a quarterback and throw the football and lead the offense. And primarily that means by doing it through the air and making good decisions with the ball, getting it out of your hand quickly, accurately, et cetera. But Ryan Day also regularly comments and says, if we need a first down and it's third and three, you better go get it. And I think that that is the part of this question from JP that goes to about confidence from Julian Sain and running the ball. I don't know that Julian's lacking confidence in it. I think he's just a guy who's been taught his whole life, run with your eyes up, run with the opportunity or thought that you still are going to throw the ball, because that is what you're designed to do when you're a quarterback. Also, you don't want to get hit. And guess what? Defensive players love hitting quarterbacks who are running. So that is a part of it. I don't know that we should expect Arthur Smith's offense to involve more run game from the quarterback, even in his best years with like agile quarterbacks, guys like Ryan Tannehill, who was a former college wide receiver. It's not like Ryan Tannehill was running all over the place. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers was not someone that was running all over the place. Desmond Ridder was running all over the place in Atlanta, but that's just because he was terrible as a quarterback. So like if you're a good quarterback and you have good weapons, your goal is to stand in the pocket and deliver the football. That was Ryan Day's preference when he took over the Buckeyes offense with Dwayne Haskins. That was Ryan Day's preference when he had an absolute freak of an athlete at quarterback in Justin Fields. That was the preference with CJ Stroud. That's been the preference with Kyle McCord. That was the even Will Howard, a guy that was brought in exclusively with conversation about like, well, he's a lot more mobile. He can run the ball. He didn't run much. He ran when he had to run. And the thing about Will is that he was 6'5", 240 pounds. And so it was easier to feel like you had some confidence. If you needed 2 yards, he'd go get it. Do I expect it to be a bigger part of the offense? No, I don't. Let me just say that. Not scheme. It's not part of the scheme. If it happens, it happens.
I think it has to be a weapon that is utilized on occasion. And I'm not, as you said, it's not scheme. I don't think that you're going to start seeing zone reads and quarterback power back at the way that we saw throughout the Urban Meyer era. And I don't think that that's prudent in this era of college football, or not the best use of talent that Ohio State has. As long as you are a wide receiver factory and you have Jeremiah Smith on your team, that should continue to be the emphasis. I was looking at it a week or two ago, Berm, just, I don't remember how it came up, but it was a similar conversation about Julian Sain and his legs and what a quarterback needed to do for Ohio State. And Brandon Beam asked me on the Buckeye Show, he's like, how many carries do you think Braxton Miller averaged per game? And I said, I think 13. It's like, no, it was 19. JT Barrett was more around a 13 to 15 range. Those days should not come back. I don't think they would even work for Ohio State anymore, to be honest with you, and definitely not with Julian Sain. But I only put that in that context because if Ryan Day wanted the quarterback run threat to be a key part of his offense, the year to look at would not be 2026. I think it would have been 2025, where he had a viable option who could have done that in Lincoln Kienholz. I think he could have operated an Urban Meyer offense. I think he could have done JT Barrett things. But that was giving up too much in terms of the arm talent and accuracy and ability to test teams down the field. That's what Ryan Day wants, and I don't think he's wrong to want that.
No, he's built an entire offense around those receivers and getting the ball down the field. They've recruited receivers at a level, at a clip that nobody has ever done before. And it seems like it would be silly then to tell those guys to run a bunch of routes just so that they can block for the quarterback run game. Now, again, that doesn't mean it shouldn't be a part of the offense, because you have to be able to put thoughts into the minds of the opponent that, hey, maybe this is something you got to watch for. That's why Ohio State started to develop more in the Lincoln Kienholz package towards the end of the year. It's why we saw in 2023, the Devin Brown package that was emerging. They want to have that option. I think that's why I always go, Will Howard is forever going to change the way that I view what Ohio State wants out of its quarterback in so many ways, because Will still did the things he had to do through the air. He just, if it was third and one against Penn State and you needed a QB power, well, damn well, that's the guy that's going to go get it. And then you look at what happened last year with the quarterback sneaks against Indiana and Miami for Julian, and you're like, oh boy, that's kind of spooky. Certainly don't want to see any of that ever again. And then that plays into the confidence. And is he well equipped to run that style of? And I don't know. I mean, I hope. Let me say it this way: I hope that in an attempt to really figure out what you have in Tavian St. Clair this year, that if Ohio State wants to continue that approach where you have one quarterback that you bring in who can kind of do a couple things, that they aren't afraid to give Tavian those opportunities, because I think, A, you need to see if he's going to be good enough to be your starting quarterback in 2027. And B, did I say B or did I say one? Did I say one or did I say A? I don't know.
A2D.
A2D2. LSTD2.
Ecstasy-3PO.
The point is, you have to do this. But Julian Sain doesn't have to be the guy to do it. As long as the guy you're bringing in is also capable of throwing the football, then you can experiment and tinker with some stuff. But again, I really don't see a world where Arthur Smith is like, you know what, we're dialing up 11 Julian Sain called run plays. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to the very first part of JP's question. Is Julian Sain limited? He's not a statue. We saw him scramble last year. We saw him break tackles. I think he broke one against Indiana that went down as a sack that I can't believe. I think it was pretty unfairly officiated. Doesn't matter. We're not going back in time and trying to get that right. We can't. But I think that there were enough times that you saw last year that he could use his legs. We also saw plays where, and I think that JP's probably talking and thinking about the one right before halftime against Miami, where there was space in front of him and a chance to get a first down, didn't take it. Maybe that was a clock situation more than... and and the pressure and the way that things had sped up in his mind more than anything else that he can or can't do physically. Because I think there is enough evidence that he can get those yards, that he's willing to do that. He's put his body on the line. He's taken hits. He's got the toughness, but he's also not a finished physical product after just 2 years at Ohio State. And we've made that point, I think, in the last few weeks, Berm. I'm fascinated to see. He's got a different haircut on the Buckeye Crews. I've seen that already. What does he look like on the first day of spring practice? And then what is he going to look like again in August and then the first start in September? Because I really believe that the growth that he showed from March of last year to his first start against Texas was as arguably the biggest jump of anyone on the entire Ohio State roster. And if he does that again, I mean, tantalizing thought for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might have been the biggest six-month jump from a quarterback in the Ryan Day tenure. I think that we saw a substantially different player in person, and you hope that that happens again. But the reality is that players like Josh Allen and Cam Newton and, Justin Herbert, they just don't exist that frequently. So, like, the majority of quarterbacks, they're only thinking, how do I get this football to that receiver? How do I get rid of this football and avoid getting myself clocked? The guys that are the elite of the elite, that are elite passers and athletic enough to make you fear them as a runner, are pretty few and far between anymore. It's not really the way the game is going.
You're right. Josh Allen is great. Zach would like to know about Carter Lowe, Berm. We don't talk about him much on the show, which is understandable since he's heading into year two. Is he still another year away from seeing the field, or could he see some reps this year that aren't in scrap time?
I personally wouldn't expect to see non-scrap time reps, but again, that's not really a knock on Carter so much as it is a understanding that Philip Daniels exists and Austin Sarrivelt exists. And if Ian Moore pushes something for one of those guys to have to move to the inside and Ian's playing left tackle, then maybe Carter gets an opportunity there. But if nothing else changes on the offensive line and you still have Phillip and Austin Sarrivelt as your offensive tackles, it becomes harder and harder to see real meaningful reps for Carter Lowe at that spot. Ohio State clearly believes in him. He's one of, he's a top 40 prospect coming out of Toledo Whitmer 2 years ago. He looks great. He's really thinned out. He's like 6'6", almost 325 pounds. Looks awesome. Moves really well. But it's hard to get on the field at Ohio State. And it's more of a testament to the way Philip Daniels and Austin Sarrivelt and Ian Moore and those other guys have emerged as opposed to a knock on Carter, who I think is on the normal trajectory for playing time. It's not the same at left tackle or right tackle as it is at guard, like when we saw Luke Montgomery and Austin Sarrivelt and those guys get an opportunity. You're out on an island. You're playing against some of the best athletes in the country. And if you're not 100% sure that guy's going to be able to hold up out there, it's hard to risk putting him out there in meaningful moments.
Yeah, and I think the conversation is twofold with Carter Lowe. If Austin Sarrivelt had gone on to the NFL this offseason, we would be talking about Carter Lowe a ton because he would be the third tackle. He would be right there needing to push Ian Moore and make sure that there's no complacency about solidifying that job. Same is true to a lesser extent with Philip Daniels. But they did get Austin Sarrivelt back, so that's key. And the other piece of this that we've discussed recently in a couple Freaky Friday mailbags is the guys that are retained that aren't starters, how significant they are, that they are being kept for a reason. Because Carter Lowe certainly would have had no shortage of suitors if he had wanted to enter the transfer portal. Ohio State didn't allow that to happen, A, or B, Carter Lowe didn't want that to happen. See, some combination of both of those things, probably that more than anything else. Like, Carter Lowe wants to play at Ohio State. Ohio State wants him to become the tackle that they envision. And Paris Johnsons are exceedingly rare. And even by year two, he still wasn't top 10 pick Paris Johnson or a full-time not losing a single rep tackle. He had, everyone has that growth. And Paris Johnson was maybe better equipped to handle that than almost any other human on the planet. But Ohio State in this world still does not want to be in a spot where even if you recruit and develop a high-level tackle that you want to play them in year two, most guys aren't going to thrive in that scenario. and they are afforded the luxury because they paid to retain Austin Saraveld. They brought in Philip Daniels a year ago. I suspect that came with an offseason raise after becoming a starter and proving himself in his first year with the Buckeyes. And Ian Moore is in that same category. Like, there's belief in Carter Lowe, but there's also, I think, a recognition, or there must be, because I have not asked Carter Lowe about this, and I don't know if you have either, that he sees the value in 2 years of mental reps, physical development, playing in reserve before being asked to go out and say, hey, can you start at left tackle for a national championship contender? That's a lot of responsibility, and yeah, you want to be sure that you're fully ready for that.
Yeah, and again, Carter Lowe is another name that I think is worth mentioning. Probably not in the same vein as we talked about Leroy Roker last week or Miles Lockhart, but Ohio State allowed Javon McFadden to walk out of the program this offseason. Justin Terry, who got snaps at tackle, left Ohio State after transferring in from West Virginia a year ago. So, like, I think that the fact that Ohio State sees Carter and says, hey, we want to make sure he stays here and develops, is all you really need to know about where they see him. And so now it's about whether or not Carter understands that this growth is a process. It is not a, you know, quick fix. It's not a situation where you are walking in and saying, I was a high four-star player, so I have to start at Ohio State. That's just not the way the world works. So, again, everything is process, and he's bought into it. And when you buy into a process, when you buy into a change, Austin, and you fully commit to it, you see the results. And I think we've seen the results with Carter Lowe. And I think there's some people out there who think highly ranked offensive players, highly ranked offensive linemen should just be a quick fix, like a GLP-1 or something.
No, you know? Sir.
No, this is, it takes work. It takes process. And that's what Awaken 180 taught me about how to handle my own health, my own diet, how I eat, when I eat, what to eat. Awaken180weightloss.com changed the way that I handle my health. It can do the same for you. It did for Austin. It did for Brandon Beam. And I feel great. And you will too. Awaken180weightloss.com. Go there and give it a look.
Thought this was an interesting question from Mark as well. Which of the following is the weak link for the Buckeyes? And that would be a relative term in my mind, but I haven't gone through his options here. And I'll say that we cut this off from the screen. If you're watching on 97.1 The Fan or 10 TV, there's further context that he knows that Ohio State is good at all of this across the board, but it's like, if they're better than everyone else, like, if they have better toys, better personnel, better coaches, like, how come they never lose? And that's a difficult place to start any argument from, but I understand the point that he, you know, is trying to make. Which of these things may have the biggest room for improvement? Talent is where he begins, whether that's high school recruiting or the transfer portal. Culture, development, coaching, game planning, focus, offense, or defense. So you have a number of options there, Berm, and I think, and I've said this before, probably to some folks' irritation, that I am in the same mindset and vein of Mark, because when Ohio State loses a game, the thing that I always say afterwards is that Ohio State lost it more than their opponent won it. I said it after Miami. I said it after Indiana. I'm trying to think of the last time I didn't say that, because I think that's true. They have a talent advantage. They have a coaching advantage. I think their culture is stronger than everyone they play. It tends to come down to me, the common thread to a lot of those have been game plans, primarily on offense, that did not maximize Ohio State's ability to win the game. That doesn't mean that I think Ohio State is at a deficiency in game planning on a week-to-week basis, but sometimes they don't take it out. Whether that they can, the coaching staff would say, well, they didn't execute it as well. The plan was good. The plan was sound. I didn't feel that way really at all against Miami. Yeah. And so that would be where I begin more than anywhere else here.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Day has made it a point, and it's a common conversation that we've had with him, or tried to invoke with him, which is he brings up all the time. Is it coaching? Is it game plan? Is it coaching? Is it personnel? Is it personnel, or is it scheme? And I think I would eliminate the top two choices from this list right away, because I don't think talent is a weak spot for Ohio State. And I certainly don't think culture is a weak spot for Ohio State.
I think you can do that with number three as well. There's, show me a program with more NFL sure. draft picks than Ohio State right now.
I think that primarily to your point, when Ohio State does lose the game, you can look at it and say, well, they really dropped the ball here. They did not do this well. I guess I tend to go more towards game planning and offense as far as what, which is crazy to say. 8 years into the Ryan Day era, a guy that completely and fundamentally changed the way Ohio State is viewed as an offensive program in the country. I think that the offense has grown a touch stale, my personal opinion. I think that they have maybe overcorrected a touch too far when it comes to the pro style of play and the pace of play and not utilizing your talent advantage and quickening the pace and that sort of stuff. I think that's a real problem. I think that if there's one area, like obviously NIL is not on here on this list. And while I don't think Ohio State would consider its NIL a weak link either, and neither would most of the company, programs around the country, because everyone except for like four programs would be jealous of Ohio State. I think there is probably an argument to be made that Ohio State is a bit stubborn in the way that it has handled its business in the NIL front and maybe adjusting a little slowly. I think we're seeing some shifts in that respect, especially as moving to 2027 recruiting class and beyond. Because I think that the lack of spending in key positions like the offensive line and defensive line, which again, I'm reluctant to even say defensive line because I know how much money Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau and those guys made in their time at Ohio State, and it was a lot. But we're talking about like the high school recruiting. I think Ohio State is learning that it has to spend big money on big time prospects at the premier positions and then develop them, as opposed to trying to get. Like, you can't lean so heavily on your development and assume that you're going to be able to develop players that are not as good as other people. Like, that, I don't, and I think that there has been some of that. I think overall, I think Ohio State's stubbornness as a program, as like a, as a prideful brand, sometimes gets in it in the way of its advancements. And I don't, maybe that's not on here. Maybe it's part of development culture. I don't know. But I think that sometimes they just get in their own way. And that's, that leads into focus being taken off of the right things and out of the wrong things, which leads to game planning getting weaker or whatever. So I think it's a, I think it's like 8% of each of these things, maybe, you know, when you lose a game.
Well, yeah, I think that's what makes it challenging because we're approaching this from, I don't think Ohio State is outside of the top five in any of those things that are listed on the screen that we talked about, or the NIL that you mentioned. You said there might be four, like Phil Knight, a Cody Canada, or a Cody Canada, Cody Campbell, Mark Cuban, and Larry Ellison. And that's it. So Oregon.
Or Larry Ruiz or whatever down there in Miami still. But there's not many.
That's true as well. Like, are you really, even if the premise is true that we see that offensive game plans could have been better a year ago or execution or whatever, is anyone going to really trade Ryan Day's offensive mind for pretty much anybody else in college football? You're definitely not going to do that on defense. And there's really no room to question the number one defense in the country the last 2 years in my mind. That's with two different coordinators. So the coaching staff as a whole, you're not going to trade that, including now one that has added Arthur Smith that has a special teams coordinator coming in Robbie Disher. We'll see how those hires work out, but they're spending more. They have more impressive resumes at basically every single position on the staff. You know, they are not number one with a bullet every single year in terms of transfer portal class or recruiting rankings, but they're always in the top five. You and I, we can't evaluate maybe fairly the culture of every program in the country because we're not in it on a day-to-day basis the way we are in the Woody. But the difference between what I cover at Ohio State compared to Tennessee is like comparing sunlight to darkness. And I know that it's good. Is it number one? I think so, but I can't prove that definitively. Everything we'd say on here, that's why they are in the college football playoff every year. That's why they're competing for championships. That's why they lose so infrequently, which is also why it makes it so befuddling when they do lose. But that is the nature of sports, is that sometimes you don't execute in every single area perfectly from week to week. It'd be great if they did, but it would also be really boring, because then the nitpicking would be even more ludicrous that we do.
Yeah, and I think that one thing I would be encouraged by, and if I was Mark, I'm not, you know, what Mark is asking here, I think is fair, like, because everyone who sees Ohio State says, well, that team should never lose a game. They've got all these advantages, but like, maybe they're not first in talent, but they're top three. Maybe they're not first in culture, but they're top three. So it requires like a perfect storm for Ohio State to lose when it loses. And whatever the issues are, I think the one thing I would be encouraged by is that Ryan Day seems to be very intentful on fixing things when things go poorly or when he notices that something isn't right. Some of that started in the last handful of years with the amount of money that the Buckeyes are spending on their assistant coaches. You know, because I think that there were early on in Ryan's career where people would question his decision to hire or promote from within and making sure that continuity was so important because of the culture. I think even to that point, I think Ryan Day is understanding that the culture can actually be enhanced by bringing in other voices and by bringing in people who haven't seen it and by bringing in people who might have a fresh perspective. And so even that sort of willingness to adapt belies a little bit what I said earlier about the stubbornness, because I think some of that stubbornness is washing away from not just Ryan Day, but also the administration in general. And as you know, Ross Bjork and those guys get to take over more of the NIL side of things and where the Buckeyes are reallocating their monies and what they want to accomplish. The increase, again, continuing increase in how much the Buckeyes are paying their assistant coaches, how many assistant coaches they have. Everything is being geared towards, well, there's nothing Ohio State shouldn't be able to fix if they notice that there's something wrong. And so that is what I've continued to be encouraged about as an Ohio State fan, and seeing it now from this side of things, like you really do get the sense that this is a program that has not been mediocre for 100+ years because they refuse to let it happen. And whether or not it's game planning last year a couple times that got them, whether it was coaching focused because of the Brian Hartline stuff, like none of that stuff is going to happen again in the same way it did.
Yeah, they're isolated incidents, which is why they lose so infrequently. When you're talking about having outside voices come in and learn the culture, see the culture, experience it, it makes me want to put a lie detector or some truth serum in Matt Patricia and be like, hey, what's the difference between the Patriot way and the Brotherhood? Because I don't think that would ever be something he would talk about on the record or publicly, but I would sure enjoy that personally. Garrett is wondering about enjoying the horseshoe more, I think, of the stadium renovations that have been announced so far. Which one, Berm, are you most excited about? Which one are you least excited about? What would be your pick if you could choose an improvement to the horseshoe?
Oh, man. I think the 1922 club will be pretty cool. I don't think I'll ever get to enjoy it, but I would like to. I think it'd be pretty cool. I am interested in the South End Zone premium seating, selfishly, because I don't know what's going to happen to our photo bunker. And I don't want any.
It's going bye-bye. You just be ready for that.
If there's a real opportunity to turn it into what like Illinois has or Indiana, where there's a photo room right there where we can see out through the glass and actually watch the game from there, which would be amazing. Ross, I know you're listening. We know you listen. And we've talked about it. I've talked to Ross about it. And I've said, if I ever win the lottery, I'm donating that to Ohio State. I'm donating a multimedia workroom. So, or GoFundMe. If America wants this to happen for us, you can send the money and we will get it done. Obviously,
I'm not sure that's the most direct way to donate to Ohio State.
Hey, man, I'm just throwing it out there. The reality is there's other things that have to happen. The lighting, the scoreboards, like I know that they want to change the north scoreboard, which seems pretty obviously necessary. I don't know what that does to the seating or the views up there, but
well, I think we're going to continue to see less overall seating in the horseshoe.
I hope so.
I don't know. I guess if you're asking like what's going to happen or what not what I would personally like to see happen, but if you're going to put a similar quality and size of video board in the north end zone, that means you're probably trending towards also having premium seating behind that end zone. And I don't, that's
yeah,
a tunnel.
Right by the tunnel. I don't know.
That's a tunnel for Skull Session and the entrance to the stadium. Like, I don't know how any of that works, but a lot of this stuff, like, if you're not going to sacrifice, which Ohio State should not, like, not going to bulldoze the horseshoe to the ground. And if you're retrofitting to put in some of this premium hospitality area to find different revenue streams, to change the lighting, to put in different video boards and different televisions throughout concourses around the stadium, like, some of it gets really challenging to fit it in the existing infrastructure.
Yeah.
And I know that there are also traditionalists who said, don't change anything. This is a college football cathedral. It needs to stay pristine. And the
but those are the same deeper. People that 25 years ago didn't want lights added to the Ohio Stadium. And now those are people that complain that there's not enough night games. So I think that there's a give and take. I don't understand some of where this, like, I've talked about the LED lights and the ability to turn the lights on and off real quick and flash them when touchdowns happen at night games, which obviously are pretty cool. And was told, like, that's too expensive for Ohio State to do. And it's like $2.5 million to replace the lights. I'm like, no, I don't think that. I mean, I know $2.5 million is not pocket change for normal people, but Ohio Stadium.
Well, do you want one Arthur Smith or do you want lights?
I want lights because they have them in high school stadiums. And I figure if they can get them there, then you can get them at Ohio State. I don't know. I mean, I know that the goal for Ohio State is simple, and it's to make the game more accessible and more enjoyable for the people that are there. I do worry constantly that the sport is pricing out the average fan. And when you make these sorts of renovations and these sort of investments into the infrastructure, there's only one person who really picks up the bill for that, and that is the average fan. And so that, I think, is... it's sort of the catch-22 of any kind of renovations like this, where for a stadium that's over 100 years old, there's no cheap way to completely reconfigure a building like Ohio Stadium. So it's going to cost a lot of money, and then it has to be paid for. Have you ever watched a game anywhere from, like, the field level suites, like the stuff that we stand in front of at Jerry World and stuff?
No. I don't really understand how you could.
Yeah, they're stupid because the people that are in them end up having to watch the game on the TVs that are included in the suites.
That's why they built that huge screen in Jerry World, because you're just staring up at it the whole time.
It's pretty stupid, but it's a status thing, and I understand it from that perspective. People will pay for it, and so if people are going to pay for it, Ohio State has to accept the money. But I think that the program would be much better off focusing on structural changes to the stadium, making the bathrooms better, making that sort of stuff, like, as opposed to finding ways to change the seating. Like, I just don't think that that really makes a difference. If there's 98,000 seats in Ohio Stadium, they're going to be full for a big game. If there's 106,000, it's going to be full for a big game. If there's 115,000, it'd be full for a big game. So what do you do to make the experience better for the average fan? How do you elevate the sound? How do you elevate the video boards, the ribbons, that sort of stuff that give you access to information and stuff to keep people engaged? I thought year one under Ross Bjork at Ohio Stadium, or last year's changes, so year two under Ross Bjork, but the first year of changes that had begun to happen, the game day experience, was a win across the board, even with the conversation about the camp song. So, like, I'm encouraged, and I think Ohio State fans should be encouraged that Ross Bjork and those guys have a vision for how that can make the experience better, but I still don't know that it matters if you add premium seats. I'd rather have better bathrooms that have heat and, you know, not pig troughs where you have to pee in and stuff like that.
I still think that the number one thing that has to be done for fan experience is slashing the concession prices. And the last trip that we had to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta reinforced that you can still pay a ton for tickets, and everyone is going to have to. That's the way of the world in basically every sport now that exists. But, you know, there's a lot of evidence that people are actually going to pay more for drinks and food and alcohol if you make it a more affordable price. So it actually winds up being a win for Ohio State. And if you don't want more, then you can just save a little bit of money But you get people to come back and enjoy it a lot more. I think that would also be really, beneficial at lower.com stadium or Nationwide Arena as well, or The Shot, basically everywhere. Atlanta is ahead of the curve on that, and good for them. I'm not going to complain about the press box. So there will be no press box snobbery, at least not on this.
Are you going to complain about the press box? Are you going to, are you looking forward to how different it is with no Jerry Emig up there? Like, what are you scared? What do you think is going to happen? You starting to feel nervous about the new guy?
I hope we don't feel any change. I mean, Jerry did a fantastic job. Mike Basford has done a phenomenal job. Change is scary for everyone, Burn, but there's good protocol that's already in place. So I hope that that is adapted by the new hire. We'll find out early, because there'll be some quick tests based on how many practices we are watching. In spring practice last year was 5. So that will be the standard on this side. Hopefully Ryan Day maintains that and says that's still important and we still need to do this amount of press conferences. It's like an offensive tackle or a long snapper. You don't want to notice the communications director. That means that they're doing a really good job.
I'm sure the new guy will be fine.
I hope so. Can't wait to find out.
Welcome to football.
Welcome to March, which after this weekend
is here. March.
Are you excited for your favorite month of the year?
Hey, man, there is nothing better than living on the bubble.
Well, actually, by the time this airs, we'll have a much better idea of if Ohio State is still on that bubble or on the right side of it or the wrong side of it. Because, again, I had to record this well in advance. So
a little early.
Needed time off could occur for Berm. He's earned it. He is the hardest working man in sports media. And I am just along for the ride on the beat presented by the Waterworks. Hope you have a fantastic end of February and beginning of March. We will see you. Was that going to be March 2nd?
And we'll see you at Roosters on Monday.
8 days away from the start of spring football. It is so close. You can taste it. And it tastes a lot like Roosters wings. Thanks for joining us. Have an awesome weekend. He's Burm. I'm Austin. So long.